The other house was Quakers, too, and they were pay dirt because they were a station on the underground female road. After the first man left, they said they'd try to get me out of the country. I won't tell you how, because some of the stations may still be operating. Each one of them was in contact with only one other one, always the next one along. There were advantages to that. It was better if you were caught, but disadvantages too, because if one station got busted, the entire chain backed up until they could make contact with one of their couriers who could set up an alternate route. They were better organized than you'd think, though. They'd infiltrated a couple of useful places. One of them was the post office. They had a driver there with one of those handy little trucks. I made it over the bridge and into the city proper in a mail sack. I can tell you that now because they got him soon after that. He ended up on the wall. You hear about these things. You hear a lot in here. You'd be surprised. The commanders tell us themselves. I guess they figure why not? There's no one we can pass it on to except each other, and that doesn't count. I'm making this sound easy, but it wasn't. I nearly shat bricks the whole time. One of the hardest things was knowing that these other people were risking their lives for you when they didn't have to. But they said they were doing it for religious reasons, and I shouldn't take it personally. That helped some. They had silent prayers every evening. I found that hard to get used to at first because it reminded me too much of that shit at the center. It made me feel sick to my stomach, to tell you the truth. I had to make an effort to tell myself that this was a whole other thing. I hated it at first. But I figure it was what kept them going. They knew more or less what would happen to them if they got caught. Not in detail, but they knew. By that time, they'd started putting some of it on the TV, the trials and so forth. It was before the sectarian roundups began in earnest. As long as you said you were some sort of a Christian, and you were married, for the first time, that is, they were still leaving you pretty much alone. They were concentrating first on the others. They got them more or less under control before they started in on everybody else. I was underground, it must have been 8 or 9 months. I was taken from one safe house to another. There were more of those then. They weren't all Quakers, some of them weren't even religious. They were just people who didn't like the way things were going. I almost made it out. They got me up as far as Salem. Then in a truck full of chickens to Maine, I almost puked from the smell. You ever thought what it'd be like to be shat on by a truckload of chickens, all of them carsick? They were planning to get me across the border there. Not by car or truck, that was already too difficult, but by boat up the coast. I didn't know that until the actual night. They never told you the next step until right before it was happening. They were careful that way. So I don't know what happened. Maybe somebody got cold feet about it. Or maybe somebody outside got suspicious. Or maybe it was the boat. Maybe they thought the guy was out in his boat at night too much. By that time, it must have been crawling with eyes up there and everywhere else close to the border. Whatever it was, they picked us up just as we were coming out the back door to go down to the dock. Me and the guy and his wife, too. They were an older couple in their 50s. He'd been in the lobster business back before all that happened, the shore fishing there. I don't know what became of them after that because they took me in a separate van. I thought it might be the end for me. Or back to the center and the attentions of Aunt Lydia and her steel cable. She enjoyed that, you know. She pretended to do all that love the sinner, hate the sin stuff, but she enjoyed it. I did consider offing myself, and maybe I would have, if there'd been any way. But they had two of them in the back of the van with me, watching me like a hawk. Didn't say a hell of a lot, just sat and watched me in that wall-eyed way they have. so it was no go. We didn't end up at the center, though. We went somewhere else. I won't go into what happened after that. I'd rather not talk about it. All I can say is they didn't leave any marks. When that was over, they showed me a movie. Know what it was about? It was about life in the colonies. In the colonies, they spend their time cleaning up. They're very clean-minded these days. Sometimes it's just bodies after a battle. The ones in the city ghettos are the worst. They're left around longer. They get rottener. This bunch doesn't like dead bodies lying around. They're afraid of a plague or something. So the women in the colonies there do the burning. The other colonies are worse, though. The toxic dumps and the radiation spills. They figure you've got 3 years maximum at those before your nose falls off and your skin pulls away like rubber gloves. They don't bother to feed you much or give you protective clothing or anything. It's cheaper not to. Anyway, they're mostly people they want to get rid of. They say there are other colonies, not so bad, where they do agriculture, cotton and tomatoes and all that, but those weren't the ones they showed me the movie about. It's old women. I bet you've been wondering why you haven't seen too many of those around anymore, and handmaids who've screwed up their three chances, and incorrigibles like me, discards, all of us. They're sterile, of course. If they aren't that way to begin with, they are after they've been there for a while. When they're unsure, they do a little operation on you so there won't be any mistakes. I'd say it's about a quarter men in the colonies, too. Not all of those gender traitors end up on the wall. All of them wear long dresses like the ones at the center, only gray. Women and the men, too, judging from the group shots. I guess it's supposed to demoralize the men having to wear a dress. Shit, it would demoralize me enough. How do you stand it? Everything considered, I like this outfit better. So after that, they said I was too dangerous to be allowed the privilege of returning to the Red Center. They said I would be a corrupting influence. I had my choice, they said, this or the colonies. Well, shit, nobody but a nun would pick the colonies. I mean, I'm not a martyr. If I'd had my tubes tied years ago, I wouldn't even have needed the operation. Nobody in here with viable ovaries, either. You can see what kind of problems it would cause. So, here I am. They even give you face cream. You should figure out some way of getting in here. You'd have 3 or 4 good years before your snatch wears out and they send you to the boneyard. The food's not bad, and there's drink and drugs, if you want it, and we only work nights. Mara, I said, you don't mean that. She's frightening me now, because what I hear in her voice is indifference, a lack of volition. Have they really done it to her then? Taken away something, what, that used to be so central to her? And how can I expect her to go on, with my idea of her courage, live it through, act it out, when I myself do not? I don't want her to be like me. Give in, go along, save her skin. This is what it comes down to. I want gallantry from her. Swashbuckling heroism, single-handed combat. Something I lack. Don't worry about me, she says. She must know some of what I'm thinking. I'm still here. You can see it's me. Anyway, look at it this way. It's not so bad. There's lots of women around. Butch paradise, you might call it. Now she's teasing, showing some energy, and I feel better. Do they let you, I say? Let? Hell, they encourage it. Know what they call this place among themselves? Jezebels. The ants figure we're all damned anyway. They've given up on us, so it doesn't matter what sort of vice we get up to. And the commanders don't give a piss what we do in our off time. Anyway, women on women sort of turns them on. What about the others, I say? Put it this way, she says, they're not too fond of men. She shrugs again. It might be resignation. Here is what I'd like to tell. I'd like to tell a story about how Maura escaped for good this time. Or if I couldn't tell that, I'd like to say she blew up Jezebel's with 50 commanders inside it. I'd like her to end with something daring and spectacular, some outrage, something that would befit her. But as far as I know, that didn't happen. I don't know how she ended, or even if she did, because I never saw her again. 39. The commander has a room key. He got it from the front desk while I waited on the flowered sofa. He shows it to me, slyly. I am to understand. We ascend in the glass half-egg of the elevator, past the vine-draped balconies. I am to understand also that I am on display. He unlocks the door of the room. Everything is the same, the very same as it was once upon a time. The drapes are the same, the heavy flowered ones that match the bedspread, orange poppies on royal blue, and the thin white ones to draw against the sun. The bureau and the bedside tables, square-cornered, impersonal. The lamps, the pictures on the walls, fruit in a bowl, stylized apples, flowers in a vase, buttercups and devil's paintbrushes keyed to the drapes. All is the same. I tell the commander just a minute and go into the bathroom. My ears are ringing from the smoke. The gin has filled me with lassitude. I wet a washcloth and press it to my forehead. After a while, I look to see if there are any little bars of soap in individual wrappers. There are. The kind with the gypsy on them from Spain. I breathe in the soap smell, the disinfectant smell, and stand in the white bathroom listening to the distant sounds of water running, toilets being flushed. In a strange way, I feel comforted, at home. There is something reassuring about the toilets. Body functions at least remain democratic. Everybody shits, as Maura would say. I sit on the edge of the bathtub, gazing at the blank towels. Once they would have excited me. They would have meant the aftermath of love. I saw your mother, Maura said. Where? I said. I felt jolted, thrown off. I realized I'd been thinking of her as dead. Not in person. It was in that film they showed us about the colonies. There was a close-up. It was her, all right. She was wrapped up in one of those gray things, but I know it was her. Thank God, I said. Why, thank God, said Maura. I thought she was dead. She might as well be, said Maura. You should wish it for her. I can't remember the last time I saw her. It blends in with all the others. It was some trivial occasion. She must have dropped by. She did that. She breezed in and out of my house as if I were the mother and she were the child. She still had that jauntiness. Sometimes, when she was between apartments, just moving into one or just moving out, she'd use my washer-dryer for her laundry. Maybe she'd come over to borrow something from me, a pot, a hairdryer. That, too, was a habit of hers. I didn't know it would be the last time, or else I would have remembered it better. I can't even remember what we said. A week later, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, when things had become suddenly so much worse, I tried to call her, but there was no answer, and no answer when I tried again. She hadn't told me she was going anywhere, but then maybe she wouldn't have. She didn't always. She had her own car, and she wasn't too old to drive. Finally, I got the apartment superintendent on the phone. He said he hadn't seen her lately. I was worried. I thought maybe she'd had a heart attack or a stroke. It wasn't out of the question, though she hadn't been sick that I knew of. She was always so healthy. She still worked out at Nautilus and went swimming every 2 weeks. I used to tell my friends she was healthier than I was, and maybe it was true. Luke and I drove across into the city, and Luke bullied the superintendent into opening up the apartment. "She could be dead on the floor," Luke said. "The longer you leave it, the worse it'll be. You thought of the smell?" The superintendent said something about needing a permit, but Luke could be persuasive. He made it clear we weren't going to wait or go away. I started to cry. Maybe that was what finally did it. When the man got the door open, what we found was chaos. There was furniture overturned. The mattress was ripped open. Bureau drawers upside down on the floor, their contents strewn and mounded. But my mother wasn't there. "I'm going to call the police," I said. I'd stopped crying. I felt cold from head to foot. My teeth were chattering.
"Don't," said Luke.
"Why not?" I said. I was glaring at him. I was angry now. He stood there in the wreck of the living room just looking at me. He put his hands into his pockets, one of those aimless gestures people make when they don't know what else to do. "Just don't," is what he said. "Your mother's neat," Mara would say when we were in college. "Later, she's got pizzazz. Later still, she's cute." "She's not cute," I would say. "She's my mother."
"Geez," said Mara, "you ought to see mine."
I think of my mother sweeping up deadly toxins, the way they used to use up old women in Russia, sweeping dirt. Only this dirt will kill her. I can't quite believe it. Surely her cockiness, her optimism, her energy, her pizzazz will get her out of this. She will think of something. But I know this isn't true. It is just passing the buck, as children do, to mothers. I've mourned for her already, but I will do it again and again. I bring myself back to the here, to the hotel. This is where I need to be. Now, in this ample mirror under the white light, I take a look at myself. It's a good look, slow and level. I'm a wreck. The mascara has smudged again, despite Maura's repairs. The purplish lipstick has bled. Hair trails aimlessly. The molting pink feathers are tawdry as carnival dolls, and some of the starry sequins have come off. Probably they were off to begin with, and I didn't notice. I am a travesty, in bad makeup and someone else's clothes. Used glitz. I wish I had a toothbrush. I could stand here and think about it, but time is passing. I must be back at the house before midnight, otherwise I'll turn into a pumpkin. Or was that the coach? Tomorrow's the ceremony, according to the calendar, so tonight Serena wants me serviced. And if I'm not there, she'll find out why, and then what? And the commander, for a change, is waiting. I can hear him pacing in the main room. Now he pauses outside the bathroom door, clears his throat, a stagey ahem. I turn on the hot tap water to signify readiness or something approaching it. I should get this over with. I wash my hands. I must beware of inertia. When I come out, he's lying down on the king-size bed with, I note, his shoes off. I lie down beside him. I don't have to be told. I would rather not, but it's good to lie down. I am so tired. Alone at last, I think. The fact is, I don't want to be alone with him, not on a bed. I'd rather have Serena there, too. I'd rather play Scrabble. But my silence does not deter him. "Tomorrow, isn't it?" he says softly. "I thought we could jump the gun," he turns toward me. "Why did you bring me here?" I say coldly. He's stroking my body now from stem, as they say, to stern. Cat stroke along the left flank, down the left leg. He stops at the foot, his fingers encircling the ankle briefly like a bracelet where the tattoo is. A braille he can read, a cattle brand. It means ownership. I remind myself that he is not an unkind man, that under other circumstances I even like him. His hand pauses. I thought you might enjoy it for a change. He knows that isn't enough. I guess it was a sort of experiment. That isn't enough either. You said you wanted to know. He sits up, begins to unbutton. Will this be worse, to have him denuded of all his cloth power? He's down to the shirt, then under it, sadly, a little belly, wisps of hair. He pulls down one of my straps, slides his other hand in among the feathers, but it's no good. I lie there like a dead bird. He's not a monster, I think. I can't afford pride or aversion. There are all kinds of things that have to be discarded under the circumstances. Maybe I should turn the lights out, says the commander, dismayed and no doubt disappointed. I see him for a moment before he does this. Without his uniform, he looks smaller, older, like something being dried. The trouble is that I can't be with him any different from the way I usually am with him. Usually I'm inert. Surely there must be something here for us, other than this futility and bathos. Fake it, I scream at myself inside my head. You must remember how. Let's get this over with, or you'll be here all night. Bestir yourself. Move your flesh around. Breathe audibly. It's the least you can do. Night, 40. The heat at night is worse than the heat in daytime. Even with the fan on, nothing moves, and the walls store up warmth, give it out like a used oven. Surely it will rain soon. Why do I want it? It will only mean more dampness. There's lightning far away, but no thunder. Looking out the window, I can see it, a glimmer, like the phosphorescence you get in stirred seawater. Behind the sky, which is overcast and too low, and a dull gray infrared. The searchlights are off, which is not usual, a power failure. Or else Serena Joy has arranged it. I sit in the darkness. No point in having the light on to advertise the fact that I'm still awake. I'm fully dressed in my red habit again, having shed the spangles, scraped off the lipstick with toilet paper. I hope nothing shows. I hope I don't smell of it, or of him either. She's here at midnight, as she said she'd be. I can hear her, a faint tapping, a faint shuffling on the muffling rug of the corridor before her light knock comes. I don't say anything, but follow her back along the hall and down the stairs. She can walk faster. She's stronger than I thought. Her left hand clamps the banister. In pain, maybe, but holding on, steadying her. I think, she's biting her lip. She's suffering. She wants it all right, that baby. I see the two of us, a blue shape, a red shape, in the brief glass eye of the mirror as we descend. Myself. My obverse. We go out through the kitchen. It's empty. A dim nightlight's left on. It has the calm of empty kitchens at night. The bowls on the counter, the canisters and stoneware jars loom round and heavy through the shadowy light. The knives are put away into their wooden rack. I won't go outside with you, she whispers. Odd to hear her whispering, as if she is one of us. Usually wives do not lower their voices. You go out through the door and turn right. There's another door. It's open. Go up the stairs and knock. He's expecting you. No one will see you. I'll sit here. She'll wait for me then, in case there's trouble. In case Cora or Rita wake up, no one knows why, come in from their room at the back of the kitchen. What will she say to them? That she couldn't sleep? That she wanted some hot milk? She'll be adroit enough to lie well. I can see that. The commander's in his bedroom upstairs, she says. He won't come down this late. He never does. That's what she thinks.
I open the kitchen door, step out, wait a moment for vision. It's so long since I've been outside, alone, at night. Now there's thunder. The storm's moving closer. What has she done about the guardians? I could be shot for a prowler. Paid them off somehow, I hope. Cigarettes, whiskey, or maybe they know all about it, her stud farm. Maybe if this doesn't work, she'll try them next. The door to the garage is only steps away. I cross, feet noiseless on the grass, and open it quickly, slip inside. The stairway is dark, darker than I can see. I feel my way up, stair by stair. Carpet here. I think of it as mushroomed colored. This must have been an apartment once for a student, a young single person with a job. A lot of the big houses around here had them. A bachelor, a studio. Those were the names for that kind of apartment. It pleases me to be able to remember this. Separate entrance, it would say in the ads, and that meant you could have sex unobserved. I reach the top of the stairs, knock on the door there. He opens it himself. Who else was I expecting? There's a lamp on. Only one, but enough light to make me blink. I look past him, not wanting to meet his eyes. It's a single room with a fold-out bed made up and a kitchenette counter at the far end and another door that must lead to the bathroom. This room is stripped down, military, minimal. No pictures on the walls, no plants. He's camping out. The blanket on the bed is gray and says U.S. He steps back and aside to let me pass. He's in his shirt sleeves and is holding a cigarette lit. I smell the smoke on him, in the warm air of the room, all over. I'd like to take off my clothes, bathe in it, rub it over my skin. No preliminaries. He knows why I'm here. He doesn't even say anything. Why fool around? It's an assignment. He moves away from me, turns off the lamp. Outside, like punctuation, there's a flash of lightning. Almost no pause, and then the thunder. He's undoing my dress. A man made of darkness. I can't see his face, and I can hardly breathe, hardly stand, and I'm not standing. His mouth is on me, his hands, I can't wait, and he's moving already. Love, it's been so long. I'm alive in my skin again, arms around him, falling, and water softly, everywhere, never ending. I knew it might only be once. I made that up. It didn't happen that way. Here is what happened. I reach the top of the stairs, knock on the door. He opens it himself. There's a lamp on. I blink. I look past his eyes. It's a single room. The bed's made up, stripped down, military. No pictures, but the blanket says U.S. He's in his shirt sleeves. He's holding a cigarette. Here, he says to me, have a drag. No preliminaries. He knows why I'm here. To get knocked up, to get in trouble, up the pole. Those were all the names for it once. I take the cigarette from him. Draw deeply in, hand it back. Our fingers hardly touch. Even that much smoke makes me dizzy. He says nothing, just looks at me, unsmiling. It would be better, more friendly, if he would touch me. I feel stupid and ugly, although I know I am not either. Still, what does he think? Why doesn't he say something? Maybe he thinks I've been slutting around at Jezebel's with the commander, or more. It annoys me that I'm even worrying about what he thinks. Let's be practical. I don't have much time, I say. This is awkward and clumsy. It isn't what I mean. I could just squirt it into a bottle and you could pour it in, he says. He doesn't smile. There's no need to be brutal, I say. Possibly he feels used. Possibly he wants something from me, some emotion, some acknowledgement that he too is human, is more than just a seed pod. I know it's hard for you, I try. He shrugs. I get paid, he says, punk surliness, but still makes no move. I get paid, you get laid. I rhyme in my head. So that's how we're going to do it. He didn't like the makeup, the spangles. We're going to be tough. You come here often?
And what's a nice girl like me doing in a spot like this? I reply. We both smile. This is better. This is an acknowledgement that we're acting, for what else can we do in such a setup? Abstinence makes the heart grow fonder, we're quoting from late movies from the time before. And the movies then were from a time before that. This sort of talk dates back to an era well before our own. Not even my mother talked like that, not when I knew her. Possibly nobody ever talked like that in real life. It was all a fabrication from the beginning. Still, it's amazing how easily it comes back to mind, this corny and falsely gay sexual banter. I can see now what it's for, what it was always for, to keep the core of yourself out of reach, enclosed, protected. I'm sad now. The way we're talking is infinitely sad, faded music, faded paper flowers, worn satin, an echo of an echo. All gone away, no longer possible. Without warning, I begin to cry. At last he moves forward, puts his arms around me, strokes my back, holds me that way for comfort. Come on, he says. We haven't got much time. With his arm around my shoulders, he leads me over to the fold-out bed, lays me down. He even turns down the blanket first. He begins to unbutton, then to stroke, kisses beside my ear. No romance, he says. Okay? That would have meant something else once. Once it would have meant no strings. Now it means no heroics. It means don't risk yourself for me if it should come to that. And so it goes. And so. I knew it might only be once. Goodbye, I thought, even at the time. Goodbye. There wasn't any thunder, though. I added that in, to cover up the sounds which I am ashamed of making. It didn't happen that way, either. I'm not sure how it happened, not exactly. All I can hope for is a reconstruction. The way love feels is always only approximate. Partway through, I thought about Serena Joy sitting down there in the kitchen, thinking, cheap. They'll spread their legs for anyone. All you need to do is give them a cigarette. And I thought afterwards, this is a betrayal. Not the thing itself, but my own response. If I knew for certain he's dead, would that make a difference? I would like to be without shame. I would like to be shameless. I would like to be ignorant. Then I would not know how ignorant I was. Salvaging. 41. I wish this story were different. I wish it were more civilized. I wish it showed me in a better light, if not happier, then at least more active, less hesitant, less distracted by trivia. I wish it had more shape. I wish it were about love or about sudden realizations important to one's life or even about sunsets, birds, rainstorms, or snow. Maybe it is about those things in a way, but in the meantime there is so much else getting in the way, so much whispering, so much speculation about others, so much gossip that cannot be verified, so many unsaid words, so much creeping about and secrecy. And there is so much time to be endured, time heavy as fried food or thick fog. And then all at once these red events, like explosions on streets otherwise decorous and matronly and somnambulant. I'm sorry there's so much pain in this story. I'm sorry it's in fragments, like a body caught in crossfire or pulled apart by force. But there is nothing I can do to change it. I've tried to put some of the good things in as well. Flowers, for instance, because where would we be without them? Nevertheless, it hurts me to tell it over again. Once was enough. Wasn't once enough for me at the time, but I keep on going with this sad and hungry and sordid, this limping and mutilated story, because, after all, I want you to hear it, as I will hear yours, too, if I ever get the chance, if I ever meet you or if you escape. In the future, or in heaven, or in prison, or underground, some other place? What they have in common is that they're not here. By telling you anything at all, I'm at least believing in you. I believe you're there. I believe you into being. Because I'm telling you this story, I will your existence. I tell, therefore you are. So I will go on. So I will myself to go on. I am coming to a part you will not like at all, because in it I do not behave well. But I will try nonetheless to leave nothing out. After all you've been through, you deserve whatever I have left, which is not much, but includes the truth. This is the story, then. I went back to Nick, time after time, on my own, without Serena knowing. It wasn't called for, there was no excuse. I did not do it for him, but for myself entirely. I didn't even think of it as giving myself to him, because what did I have to give? I did not feel munificent, but thankful, each time he would let me in. He didn't have to. In order to do this, I became reckless. I took stupid chances. After being with the commander, I would go upstairs in the usual way, but then I would go along the hall and down the Martha stairs at the back and through the kitchen. Each time, I would hear the kitchen door click shut behind me, and I would almost turn back. It sounded so metallic, like a mousetrap or a weapon, but I would not turn back. I would hurry across the few feet of illuminated lawn. The searchlights were back on again, expecting at any moment to feel the bullets rip through me, even in advance of their sound. I would make my way by touch up the dark staircase and come to rest against the door, the thud of blood in my ears. Fear is a powerful stimulant. Then I would knock softly, a beggar's knock. Each time I would expect him to be gone, or worse, I would expect him to say I could not come in. He might say he wasn't going to break any more rules, put his neck in the noose for my sake. Or even worse, tell me he was no longer interested. His failure to do any of these things I experienced as the most incredible benevolence and luck. I told you it was bad. Here is how it goes. He opens the door. He's in his shirt sleeves. His shirt untucked, hanging loose. He's holding a toothbrush, or a cigarette, or a glass with something in it. He has his own little stash up here, black market stuff, I suppose. He's always got something in his hand, as if he's been going about his life as usual, not expecting me, not waiting. Maybe he doesn't expect me, or wait. Maybe he has no notion of the future, or does not bother or dare to imagine it. Is it too late? I say. He shakes his head no. It is understood between us now that it is never too late, but I go through the ritual politeness of asking. It makes me feel more in control, as if there is a choice, a decision that could be made one way or the other. He steps aside and I move past him and he closes the door. Then he crosses the room and closes the window. After that he turns out the light. There is not much talking between us anymore, not at this stage. Already I'm half out of my clothes. We save the talking for later. With the commander, I close my eyes, even when I'm only kissing him good night. I do not want to see him up close. But now, here, each time, I keep my eyes open. I would like a light on somewhere, a candle perhaps stuck into a bottle, some echo of college. But anything like that would be too great a risk. So I have to make do with the searchlight. The glow of it from the grounds below filtered through his white curtains, which are the same as mine. I want to see what can be seen of him, take him in, memorize him, save him up so I can live on the image later. The lines of his body, the texture of his flesh, the glisten of sweat on his pelt, his long, sardonic, unrevealing face. I ought to have done that with Luke, paid more attention to the details, the moles and scars, the singular creases. I didn't, and he's fading. Day by day, night by night, he recedes, and I become more faithless. For this one, I'd wear pink feathers, purple stars, if that were what he wanted, or anything else, even the tail of a rabbit. But he does not require such trimmings. We make love each time as if we know beyond the shadow of a doubt that there will never be any more for either of us, with anyone, ever. And then, when there is, that too is always a surprise, extra, a gift. Being here with him is safety. It's a cave where we huddle together while the storm goes on outside. This is a delusion, of course. This room is one of the most dangerous places I could be. If I were caught, there would be no quarter, but I'm beyond caring. And how have I come to trust him like this, which is foolhardy in itself? How can I assume I know him, or the least thing about him and what he really does? I dismiss these uneasy whispers. I talk too much. I tell him things I shouldn't. I tell him about Mara, about Avglen. Not about Luke, though. I want to tell him about the woman in my room, the one who was there before me, but I don't. I'm jealous of her. If she's been here before me, too, in this bed, I don't want to hear about it. I tell him my real name and feel that, therefore, I am known. I act like a dunce. I should know better. I make of him an idol, a cardboard cutout. He, on the other hand, talks little. No more hedging or jokes. He barely asks questions. He seems indifferent to most of what I have to say, alive only to the possibilities of my body, though he watches me while I'm speaking. He watches my face. Impossible to think that anyone for whom I feel such gratitude could betray me. Neither of us says the word love, not once. It would be tempting fate. It would be romance, bad luck.
This ends side 2 of cassette 7. Please stop the tape before fast-forwarding to the end and loading cassette 8.